call the meeting to order. Before the roll call, let me mention that Dr. Schroeder is recovering, oh, I'm sorry, not to be, Dr. Schroeder is recovering from surgery at home and is expected to return in time for the next meeting of the Board of Directors of the Board, and I'm sure we all wish her a speedy recovery. So with that, we'll start, and Ms. Cordial, would you please?
She's still doing
Oh, you're trying to make sure we're all on. I see. And we'll also, reminder to all speak into your microphones when answering the roll, if you'd call the roll, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. All righty. Board Member Flores.
Here.
Board Member Goff.
Here.
Board Member Masnick.
Here.
Board Member Rankin.
Here.
Board Member Scheffel.
Here.
Board Member Schroeder is out.
Excused.
And Chairman Durham.
Here. Quorum is present, and we'll proceed now to the Pledge of Allegiance. And Dr. Scheffel, if you wouldn't mind leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Now we'll proceed with
my glasses.
Is there any?
Yes, let's see. All right, now we'll proceed to approve the agenda. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
Sure.
Yes, Ms. Rankin.
I make a motion to approve the agenda.
It's been moved that the agenda be approved. Is there a second? Seconded Ms. Masnick. It's been moved and seconded. Is there objection to the approval of the agenda? Seeing none, that motion is adopted by a vote of 6-0. Next item would be the consent agenda. Ms. Rankin.
I move to place the following matters on the consent agenda. 16-03 regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a license, charge number 2015EC795, direct department staff and the State Attorney General's Office to prepare the document necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of a license holder's professional teacher license pursuant to section 22-4-104, Colorado Revised Statutes. 16.04 regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a credential, charge number 2015EC1501. Direct Department of Staff and State Attorney General's Office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the license for the revocation of the credential holder's professional teacher license pursuant to section 22-4-104, Colorado Revised Statute 16.05 regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning a credential, charge number 2015EC1729. Direct Department staff and the State Attorney General's Office to prepare the document necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of the credential holder's professional teacher license pursuant to section 22-4-104, Colorado Revised Statute 16.06, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning an authorization, charge number 2016EC109. Direct Department staff and the State Attorney General's Office to prepare the documents necessary to request a formal hearing for the revocation of a holder's authorization pursuant to section 22-60.5-108, Colorado Revised Statutes 16.07, regarding disciplinary proceedings concerning an application, charge number 2016EC983, Direct Department staff to issue a notice of denial and appeal rights to the applicant pursuant to section 24-4-104, Colorado Revised Statutes. 16.08, Appendix 6, Initial Emergency Authorization Requests as set forth in the published agenda. 16.09, Approve Western State Colorado University's request for reauthorization as a provider of traditional and alternative educator preparation programs as set forth in the published agenda. 17.01, approved Denver Public Schools Innovation Application on behalf of Bear Valley International School as set forth in the published agenda. 17.02, approve Denver Public Schools innovation application on behalf of Kepner Beacon Middle School as set forth in the published agenda. 17.03, approve Denver Public Schools innovation application on behalf of McAuliffe Manual Middle School as set forth in the published agenda. 17.04, approve the Charter School Institute's request for waivers on behalf of GVA North Glen as set forth in the published agenda. This is the end of the consent agenda.
Is there a second to the motion to approve the consent agenda? Dr. Scheffel seconds the motion. Any discussion? Seeing none, is there objection to the adoption of the motion approving the consent agenda? Seeing none, that motion is declared adopted. We will now proceed to public comment. Ms. Cordial, right in front of me here. Let me say your 3-minute limitation, and Ms. Cordial will be the official timekeeper. We'll start with Katie Anderson from Strive. Katie, if you identify yourself and who you represent, please. Please speak up.
I'm Kathleen Anderson.
It's not on.
Mr. Chair, Durham, and members of the State Board of Education, thank you for the opportunity to present to you today. My name is Kathleen Anderson. I am here representing myself. I have been teaching in Colorado for 5 years. I have a graduate degree from the University of Colorado Denver in Educational Psychology, and I am currently a Colorado Educator Voice Fellow. I am here to urge the State Board of Education to include teachers in the revision process of the Colorado Academic Standards, as they are the ones on the ground steeped in teaching the standards day in and day out. This past March, I was hired as a founding sixth grade teacher at Strive Prep Kepner in Southwest Denver. We began year one of our turnaround initiative this past August. Our students and families in the Southwest Denver community have been underserved for more than 20 years, as Kepner has been ranked in the bottom 1% of middle schools in Colorado for over 2 decades. I am a teacher who enters my sixth grade English language arts classroom every morning, knowing that many of my students are reading well below grade level. Of the 27 students in my first period ELA class, 19 of these scholars are reading at or below a third grade level. 5 of my sixth grade students cannot read. As these pieces of data swarm my mind all day long, I can honestly say that I am oftentimes terrified. Terrified that I am not going to give the absolute best instruction during every second of every minute of every instructional hour we have together. However, I can promise you that this fear of doing any of these students wrong for any second of our learning time together is something that motivates me to spend hours writing, revising, and editing my lessons. Since the first week in September, I've spent nearly 8 hours every Saturday crafting English language arts lessons for my English language learners, constantly wondering these questions. Do my objectives align to a particular standard? Does my guiding question align with the standard? Does my exit ticket align with the standard? Do my text-dependent questions truly get at the power standard that my students need to master? Some of you hearing this may ask yourself, why bother aligning everything to these standards if it takes so much work? I'm here to tell you that while the bar is high and some of my students are low, I know that my kids deserve high expectations and are capable of reaching them. I know that while the standards should be continuously revised and improved, the fact that we move from the old reading and writing standards to reading, writing, and communicating will better prepare students for success in life. As you consider the process for reviewing the Colorado Academic Standards, it is imperative that teachers have a seat at the table, and I urge you all to ensure that happens. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Okay, next item would be, that's the only person signed up to testify or to speak. Okay, very good. We'll move on now to Ms. Cordial, your director's report, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Ms. Chairman Durham, members of the board, and Interim Commissioner Anthes. As another reminder, please remember to turn your microphones on. If you turn them off when you are not speaking. For those of you needing to connect CDE's guest wireless, locate CDE hotspot, and the password is silver, capital S. In your board packets, you have the following materials: your events calendar and quick glance expense report. Also in your packets or available on board docs are the following materials. For 9.01, you have the draft 2017 legislative priorities. For 10.01, you have a memo regarding the standards review revision process plan, accompanying PowerPoint draft proposal for the standards review and revision plan, the technical assistance response document, and Colorado revised statutes document for 227-105 CRS. For item 12.01, you have a memo regarding the accounting and reporting rulemaking hearing, a red line and clean copy of those rules, a rules to crosswalk statute and response to comments document. For items 12.02 and 12.03, you have a memo regarding the college entrance exam, 1 CCR 30146, and the administration of the ACT assessment on a national test date, 1 CCR 301-54, rulemaking hearings to be combined into one rule, a red line and clean copy of those rules, and the rules to statute crosswalk. For item 12.04, you have a memo regarding the administration, certification, and oversight of Colorado online programs rulemaking hearing, a red line and clean copy of those rules, and the rules to statute crosswalk. For item 14.01, you have a memo regarding Pete's Plateau waiver request, Pete's Plateau's revised rational and replacement plan, their stakeholder communication, assigned local board resolution, their revised kindergarten assessment and kindergarten instructional plan, and CDE staff's response document to Pete's Plateau waiver request. For item 15.01, you have a memo regarding the READ Act budget planning update, the accompanying PowerPoint, and a summary of the READ fund usage and reporting requirements. For item 16.08, you have a memo regarding the six initial emergency authorization requests. For item 16.09, you have two memos regarding the Western State Colorado University's request for authorizations for its preparation programs. For item 17.01, you have a memo regarding Denver Public Schools innovation application request on behalf of Bear Valley International School and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For item 17.02, you have a memo regarding DPS's innovation application request on behalf of Kepner Beacon Middle School and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For item 17.03, you have a memo regarding Denver Public Schools innovation application request on behalf of McAuliffe Manual Middle School and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For item 17.04, you have a memo regarding the Charter School Institute's request for waivers on behalf of GVA North Glen and supporting materials pertaining to their request. For tomorrow, item 4.01, you have a memo regarding the Every Student Succeeds Act update, the accompanying PowerPoint, the ESSA Spoke and Hub Committee report, and updates for standards from August 29th, September 8th, and September 22nd. And then you also have the title program fact sheets in the title programs table. And for item 5.01, you have the district by district 2016-17 to 2017-18 of the governor's November 2016 budget request. And that concludes my report.
Thank you. Any questions, Ms. Cordial? Seeing none, thank you very much. Cordial. Commissioner Anthes, your report, please.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Nice to be here. I have a quick commissioner update today. We are mostly focused on the accountability request to reconsider process, as we've been talking to you all about over the past several months. The final request to reconsider, we've been working with districts over the last several weeks on the drafts that they provided to us so we could give them feedback and provide any guidance to them as necessary. The final request to reconsiders were due yesterday. We received 144 of them. So we will now be reviewing all of those. It'll be quite a heavy workload. So that's a large part of our focus right now. As you know, we continue to be focused on the development of the ESSA plan, hosting all of the Spoke Committee hearings, starting to draft plans, having the Hub Committee meetings, and so forth. Lastly, I've been starting to visit all of the districts that are on the final year of the turnaround clock. And spending the day with them so that I get to know them a little bit better as well. So have just started that. I've also been visiting the ones that have just come off the clock to learn a little bit there as well. So we wanna see what we can do in terms of learning from those that have been successful. So with that, that's all I have today, Mr. Chair.
Questions of Commissioner Antis? Seeing none, we'll proceed then to item 9, legislative priorities. And Ms. Mello is not yet here, I see.
I just sent her a text, so hopefully she'll be over shortly. But we can take up. Oh, yeah. Would you like to just take up your board reports at this time?
I can correct one thing I said, actually.
Okay.
I got a text from staff.
Okay.
It won't take a half hour. It will be really quick. We actually had 144 drafts for requests to reconsider, but we have not tallied the final number that submitted. So it'll be around there, but we're not exactly sure.
Well, before we proceed, I'm not sure, but we have Sarah, who's a board member in District 38, and I did get a text from her saying she was caught in traffic and would like to engage in public comment. Is that correct? Why don't you come up and introduce yourself, as long as we're ahead of schedule, and we'll go back to that particular item. And thank you for the text, and you arrived just in the nick of time. Please proceed, introduce yourself.
My name is Sarah Sampaio. I'm from Monument. I have three kids in school there, and I'm a school board member. I'm here not on behalf of the school board, but on behalf of my constituents that elected me and my children. I'm here to comment on the standards survey that you have out currently for people to participate in. We have encouraged our community to participate, and I've had some feedback I'd like to share. Personally, the other day I got online to take the survey you have out, and I was disappointed with the survey questions. I don't know if you've had an opportunity as members of the board to take a look at it, but I think it exemplifies the problem with data-driven decision-making. Surveys are only as good as the question and answer choices. So let's look at a couple of the questions from the survey. I just did a screenshot. Question number 6. In your opinion, taken together, the Colorado academic standards in all 10 content areas are relevant to the student's college and career readiness, and then you get to choose, disagree, strongly disagree, and the scale. Relevant, of course they're relevant. Are they conducive to? No. And so the way you answer the question is going to give a false impression. And I've had people say to me that they don't want to do the survey because the answer choices are not giving them an option that reflects their views about the standards. Comprehensive was the next thing you could choose. Well, they're way too comprehensive. That's the problem. But that's not an option here. They're detailed enough. Yes, they're too detailed. But that's not one of the answer choices. So I think you get an idea. How rigorous are they? That's part of the problem. It's assuming that the people answering the survey buy into the premise altogether of the academic standards. So it's not going to be a helpful result from the get-go. Those of us who aren't happy with the standards, it's not going to be reflected in the survey. In my personal opinion, after consulting with teachers and experts, the standards are too prescriptive. They dictate curriculum too closely, and several subjects are embedded with a social engineering ideology that are designed to shape the attitudes, values, and beliefs of the next generation. I have a printout from the English Language Arts Standards, and it says, under the nature of reading, writing, and communicating, number one, readers like to read multiple perspectives because it causes them to think about their own thinking and be clear about what they really believe. So our kids are supposed to like questioning their core values. Is this our state standard? In America, the freedom to shape this according the standards, the values of the next generation is according to each individual's religious or political persuasion. It's fundamental to our constitutional freedoms. Top-down mandating of educational standards that shape how the next generation thinks about topics under the guise of critical analytical thinking strips this country of the cornerstone of freedom, the freedom of thought. Please allow free market competition in education and do not mandate and control what the next generation learns. I'll stop there because I know my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sampaio.
May I ask a question?
We generally shouldn't, Dr. Flores, for...
May we have a copy of that?
Yes, if you could...
I can email it
to you. That'd be just provide it to Ms. Cordial, and she'll copy it, and we'll get it distributed.
Which part? Would I read just or...
The whole thing.
Both, if you have it.
Yes, okay.
Okay, thank you very much, and well done. Thank you, Dr. Flores.
I'm sorry.
Okay, let's see. Now, we're still ahead of schedule, so what else could we do? We could
board
do
board reports.
Board reports.
Just do that.
That's the item 18. We are ahead.
Yeah.
All right, let's just
day.
Start down. Ms. Masnick, you're first.
Well, first I had the opportunity to attend an event sponsored by the Rural Alliance in Burlington. A couple of weeks ago. That was a very nice fair. It was very nice to get to meet a lot of people there. And I guess the only other thing I would like to say is congratulations to our members, Chairman Durham, Director Rankin, and Director Shuffel for their successful re-election.
Thank you. Ms. Goff?
Thank you. Caught me off guard. I was planning to think through this all day. Thank you. Highlights. I think I attended the Adams County Youth Initiative. It's called the Catalyst for Change Breakfast. This is their first annual event to start publicizing all of the joint community and business and school district activities to bring kids through school years, cradle to career, with the supports that let everybody know, families as well, what's available to students, with the goal of making sure that kids are well prepared to start school, that they have the resources and supports they need during the regular school years, and that they're prepared to go to college. It really is, they're following our state's mission for that. Very well attended, higher than expected attendance. This was primarily from Adams County folks and activists and elected officials and other organizations. So it was delightful. Everyone's quite enthused. That's the main highlight. I don't know whether we reported a lot on it. Angelica and I did attend NASB's last annual meeting, I believe that was after our board meeting, and got state board perspectives from all over the country, another well-attended event. Primary topic was ESSA and some of its ramifications. So I will be dispersing throughout our time some information that other states have been considering and some of the reactions to that. Also, Adams County and both Jeffco, only in different ways, are starting to look at, of course, budgets, which hot topic now, but how to continue what kinds of innovative activities and goals they have, but also looking at some different ways of going about it. I had a long conversation with a parent recently about changing. The word change can be an off-putter, but I don't think it is in this case. To really look at some ways where particularly high school, and we are encouraged to look at ways high school can change. So I find those kind of conversations interesting and interesting. Because there's still a lot of opportunity to think about things, but we also have a timeline. So we're looking at some crunch times on the one hand, but time to consider as well as we can on the other. So those are mainly what I've been experiencing on our work level, but appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Goff. Dr. Shuffel?
Well, I've just been out meeting with the public and just doing a lot of attending events, speaking, and it's just been a great opportunity, really, to hear from the public, to be engaged in this work. I don't think they've formally called my race yet, but feeling really good about it and just appreciate the opportunity to serve on the State Board of Education for all the great support I've gotten. So, thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Flores?
Thank you. I have visited a couple of schools, one of which was Hope Online. I visited during their Dia de los Muertos activities, day when they were working on art projects, especially they were decorating a skull, a sugar skull. They were also dancing. I think that they had the Clio dance group coming in to help the kids dance. So that was very, very enlightening. I like the arts, and I'm glad that Hope Online is doing this. Also, I attended the CDE annual equity conference, and I was impressed with all the subjects and the people who were very knowledgeable and were explaining new rules and regs. So I hope that I really hope that kind of the public maybe gets a little chance to participate next year, because I think it's a great conference. And so I hope we continue that. Also, I have been attending the HOP committee meetings, and I think that's an interesting process that we're going through, and I've been learning a lot from, you know, what the community and reports from the spoke committee and such. I also have been getting calls about, you know, some of these issues as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Flores. Ms. Rankin?
One of the jobs that I believe we have as board members, and I embrace this job, is getting out in the community and educating them as to what the State Board of Education does and their responsibilities within the state. With that in mind, I visited with Matt Hamilton, a school board member in Roaring Fork School District. He wants to set up a meeting with his whole board and include me in that to pursue some of these educational ideas that I'm talking about. I also attended the West Slope Superintendent's meeting where they talked about the supplemental online blended learning opportunities, and a lot of them enhanced by House Bill 16-1222 last year, for rural students to be able to access some of the advanced courses or courses that their school does not offer in a blended learning situation. Right now, there are 664 course offerings, and they expect to have at least 1,000 by the end of this year. So that's pretty exciting, and they gave me copies that Mrs. Cordial just passed out to all the board members about these courses that anyone can access from any school, but it's through the BOCES. And you don't have to be a member of BOCES to do that. Rout County, I met with Tim Corrigan. He's a newly elected county commissioner. I just briefly spoke to him about the Peabody resolution, the $1 million that the state gave because of the Peabody closure there. They now have gotten some of the money back from Peabody for taxes, and they are in the process, I'm sure Leanne M. can talk to us further about that, of returning them to the state, so that CDE, so that other schools that might be in the same situation will have a fund there to that we can grant awards to. I attended a Carbondale trustees meeting and updated them on upcoming decision making in January from the board, including turnaround status and commissioner selection. I also visited Hope Online. I was invited to their literacy day to read a book. My favorite book when I was 5 years old was The Chirkandoose. Part chicken, part turkey, part duck, and part goose, yeah. And that was a lot of fun. I enjoyed that. I met with CDE directors last week for further explanation of various waivers and turnaround schools and what we have to do next year. I find myself continually in the education process to learn what it is my job responsibilities are and to go in depth with them. With that in mind, I met with Joyce Zerkowski and was able to review PARC ELA tests in grades 3 through 9. Also math, it was 3 through 9 available. I only got through grade 3. Rep Rankin heard that I was going to do this, and he joined me, but he got through algebra, so he's a little smarter than I am in that. I also want to bring to the attention that I read online about school funding. Independence Institute, Ross Izzard, has an excellent publication out. If anyone wants to learn about school funding in depth, it's an excellent manual for that, and I really appreciate all the work that went into that.
Thank you, Ms. Rankin. I would just like to say a couple of things. One is that I'm honored to have the opportunity to serve for a term on the State Board as a result of this election. I'm appreciative of those who showed confidence in me last night with the election returns. I had the opportunity to visit Ellicott Schools, which are about 45 minutes east of Colorado Springs, and you're still in El Paso County. It's a pretty good-sized county, and meet with their superintendent and staff, Dr. Patrick Cullen. Every time I go to one of these smaller rural schools, you get it renews your faith in what's getting done out there. People that have more than their share of challenges, everything from transportation issues to critical mass issues of enough students to be able to offer a wide range of courses, that how they meet and deal successfully with those challenges, and how committed those people are. It's gratifying to watch that in action, and I think maybe one of these days we ought to maybe have a state board meeting in a small rural school so everybody gets the opportunity to just take a look and see how these schools do and what they're able to accomplish under certainly difficult circumstances. So I appreciate the invitation from Dr. Cullen and very much enjoyed that opportunity. So thank you. Now I think, Elizabeth, we're ready to start with, we're ahead of schedule still, but we could move on to legislative priorities. Which I'm not, I know I had something about that. I can't find it. But, so.
Just turning it over to Jennifer Mello.
Yeah, well, I know I had, but
oh,
there was a document.
Oh, yes. There's
a what
draft.
Did I do?
The draft of the legislative.
Yeah, the draft of our priorities. Was that? Yeah, okay. But I don't have mine. I wrote all over mine.
No,
well, that's all right. Ms. Mello, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the State Board, first, congratulations to those of you who were reelected last night. There are a few of you. So we've had this legislative priority discussion several years in a row now. The document that I sent you reflects only what I would consider to be kind of technical changes relative to things that, like, for example, if you said, we want such and such to happen, and such happened, I took that out. So that is all I've done here. This is your document. This is an expression of your priorities and policies. Happy to participate in the discussion and answer any questions or simply take your feedback and make the changes.
Okay, questions of Ms. Mello? I have a couple to start. Would you give us a quick recap of what you know about the election results and just a quick summary of how the chambers will lay out and what changes you might anticipate in terms of education committee leadership, that sort of thing?
Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to. I won't obviously talk about national results because I'm assuming none of you live under a rock and you don't need me to tell you what has happened at that level. I think the actually interesting kind of buzzword at the state is status quo. If you look at, so the Colorado Senate, I believe, will remain in Republican control. It will continue to be under Republican control by one vote, 18 to 17. I think it is likely that Senator Kevin Grantham will be elected president of the Senate. I don't have a prediction on who will be elected majority leader. That is a kind of hotly contested race. The leadership elections, I'll refer to these as I go through this, will all be held tomorrow, so we'll know more about that tomorrow, and it, that is the members themselves who get to vote in that, and it is a secret vote. So we'll know results, but that's about all we'll know. The House will continue to be controlled by Democrats. I think that they will have expanded their margin in the House. For the last 2 years, they have had 34 seats to the Republicans' 31. I believe the Democrats will be at 37 seats. And math is not my strong point, but I believe that means Republicans will be at 28 seats. I think that adds up to 65. I think Representative Crisanta Duran, who's currently the majority leader, is very likely to be elected speaker tomorrow. I mean, none of this is actually official until January, but, you know, for all intents and purposes. Again, a very hotly contested race for majority leader, so I don't know what that will look like. I think in the House Republican caucus, there's also a lot of conversation happening, and I don't know who will lead that particular caucus at this point. In terms of committee, because the status quo is kind of the buzzword, I don't expect huge change on the education committees. You know, you never know, right? Because leadership, that is absolutely a prerogative of leadership. It's one of the reasons why you want to be in leadership, is you get to make those decisions. But I think there's a pretty good chance that Senator Hill will continue to chair the Senate Education Committee, and Rep. Patterson will continue to chair the House Education Committee. And we will keep you updated on all of that as it changes. We'll definitely see some changes over at the Joint Budget Committee as well, just given, you know, where things are right now. I don't know exactly what that will look like, but we will report all of that as quickly as we get it. We will know the leadership stuff tomorrow. The committee stuff sometimes takes longer. Again, completely in the prerogative of leadership, so sometimes it takes a week, sometimes it takes a month. But rest assured that the minute we have that information, we will share it.
Questions of members of the board? From members of the board, I'm sorry. Seeing none, what schedule would you suggest that we try to meet in order to, if we have proactive legislation, to push that forward? When should the legislative committee, the legislative committee of this body, plan to meet to start to formulate that and give you time to find sponsors and that sort of thing if we have proactive legislation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As soon as possible, I mean, honestly, and I don't mean to be dramatic about that, but things are going to move very quickly here. I think, you know, the rest of this week we'll be kind of just digesting election results and figuring out leadership. Starting next week, we will be off to the races in terms of bills and bill deadlines and making decisions about sponsors. And I'm a firm believer in one of the best ways to make sure legislation passes is to get the best possible sponsors, to get the right sponsors. We can talk specifics whenever you'd like, but I'd love to get that moving in the next week or two.
Thank you. Ms. Gorgel, based on that, would you, current members of the Legislative Committee, mind convening them at the earliest possible convenience for those members so that they can have preliminary discussions of some things we've talked about, particularly the waiver issues and some of those, and if you drop an agenda for them and the items we've kind of collectively talked about considering and see if we can convene that meeting before Thanksgiving, certainly, because I know the pressure that sponsors will be under to reserve bills will be growing very quickly. Mm-hmm. So.
Yes.
And then that's a good question Ms. Rankin asked. Our legislative priorities are probably due to be revised. Ms. Cordial, is that a fair statement?
I'm sorry?
Legislative priorities? We haven't adopted these for...
No, this is information for you all to discuss them today and see if you have any changes. In between now and the December board meeting is when you would take action on your 2017 priorities. And then I believe, and we can do it sooner, but I believe normally at the January board meeting is when we select the following year's legislative contacts or legislative liaisons, my apologies. But for the time being, before Thanksgiving, I'll work with Board Member Goff and Board Member Shuffle.
Okay, thank you. We might move that process forward a little bit. And I think we'll try and talk about these legislative priorities either later today. If you would remind me we should add this back into the agenda.
Okay.
Or after everybody's had a chance to kind of digest this, and maybe I can find my notes. And if we don't get it done, we do have some extra time tomorrow. Okay. So if you would help us make sure that this gets on the make sure we don't overlook having this discussion, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Further questions of Ms. Mello? Yes, Ms. Goff?
Well, no, not really, but sure.
We're raising your
hand. Well, I was going more for the technical question.
Okay.
Around the calendar, I wonder if, I know we can get it, and I'm sorry for starting this out as a request, but when it doesn't have to be. But the calendar of the hub committee and the calendar of the meetings that have been set up for January around the ESSA work and how that calendar lines up with legislative things. I am thinking toward the session in integrating this work on ESSA because I just kind of feel more comfortable if I know where the channels come together. Because if there's something proposed in the legislature or if there's a bill floating around that's related to that now, I would find that helpful to us as well. Because there's some of these things in here through the discussions about ESSA, we're still trying to sort through how that follows our current laws and what kinds of other things we might expect to be working on. And as far as the new ed committees, should there be any great changes? As far as you know, Jennifer, will they remain the same size? We've had years where the actual size of the whole group has changed.
Mr. Chair, Board Member Goff, yes, that is prerogative of leadership to set the size of the committees. I don't think the House committee will change in size. That one has been fairly consistent. It's the Senate committee that has kind of grown and shrunk over the years. I wish I could tell you, but I honestly don't know. And I would point out that so the interim committee of the legislature looking at ESSA has three more meetings. Those will happen between now and the December holidays. Additionally, the Joint Budget Committee will have the briefing where the staff brings issues to the committee will occur, the hearing where the board and the department kind of respond and or put what issues you all would like on the table will occur, and the SMART Act hearing in front of the Joint House and Senate Education Committees will occur. I don't have dates for any of those. I wish that I did. I've asked. I promise you I did ask, and I was told what I thought I would be told, which is we don't know that until after the election. So obviously as soon as we get that information, we'll share it as well.
Further questions? Before you leave, Mr. Chapman, could you join us for just a second to talk about this ESSA issue? This is a little out of order, and I apologize for putting people on the spot, but we're trying to kill 15 minutes.
Lucky us.
Glad I could help.
Yes. Well, I've been known to filibuster that long myself, but might meet with some resistance. Since none of us live under a rock and there are perhaps likely to be some changes at the U.S. Department of Education that could affect the interpretations of and or the rules currently surrounding ESSA, in your judgment, would it be helpful, this board has put you on a very tight time frame to submit the state plan, would it be helpful in giving you an opportunity to review or speculate about some of those changes to change that deadlines and move them back a little bit?
Yeah.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but
thank you.
What the heck, we're all here. So.
I'm anticipating that there may be a change that would change in timeline that would emanate from the U.S. Department of Education, but anything is speculation. I know the committees that are working to develop the drafts of the ESSA sections are working very hard, any additional time would be helpful, I think, to them in clarifying clarifying the decision points with their stakeholders and discussing them and getting recommendations to the HUB committee and to the state board. So, yes, additional time would be helpful.
So the current deadline we're under is, or that we've imposed on the department is what for submission?
We is a March submission, but we have been discussing possibly requesting from the board an additional month to submit in April. We hope to begin posting drafts of the sections of the ESSA state plan on our website for public comment in mid-December. There is some concern about that because a lot of the opportunity for folks to review the drafts and make comments would be occurring over the holidays, and we don't want to give an adequate opportunity for everybody to access the state plan and comment. So we would like we'd like to be able to extend or alter our timeline and push it back basically by a month.
Okay. So I think, as I recall, the board essentially as a group imposed by consensus that March submission deadline. Given a number of the changes we're all going to be dealing with, would there be any objection from members of the board to directing staff to take until at least April, the end of April 30th, for that submission, giving them additional time to react to any changes that may occur at the federal level, and allowing the board to have more a more extensive review of our options? Is there objection to that change? And we'll just take it as a policy question, Ms. Goff.
No objection to considering it change. And I'd add that there's been talk among states about the possibility of, if the U.S. Department of Ed wants to suggest another extension possibility. In general, that suggestion was May, seen as a midpoint between the two dates. And so it's not that a lot of people aren't considering trying to make that work. So I just wondered if we choose April, or we set April as our goal, is there something that indicates we have that's a carved in stone decision as well? Or we need a goal date. But how firm does that have to be?
I think it's obvious that this board can work those changes. We do meet regularly, and changing circumstances should dictate changing results on occasion. So, Ms. Chapman, if we agree right now to April 30th, does that eliminate the necessity of everybody working over Christmas and providing those comments before January 1st?
Thank you. No. That would be very, very helpful.
We're trying to make friends.
Good news for all.
So why don't we plan on that and wish everybody a Merry Christmas, and we'll let those deadlines slip until the end of April if there's no objection from members of the board.
Mr. Chair?
Ms. Rankin?
I would just like to ask Mr. Chapman if anything new comes up between now and then, not to wait till a board meeting. I'd like an email on things that are coming down that maybe blindsiding us somehow and address those right away.
Yeah, we do have a couple of upcoming calls scheduled with the U.S. Department of Education as part of their Office of State Support process, and we hope to bring up the topic of what's the status of the rules. Is there any reason to believe that the timelines may be altered?
Thank you.
Great. Okay, any other questions or comments or direction? Ms. Mellon, did you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, if I could just add something to that. I understand your discussion is about how the Department of Education will continue to implement ESSA. Talk about blindside, to use your word, Board Member Rankin. I think it's also possible that the federal government could reconsider the law in its entirety. I mean, we can't rule that out either, so there could be even more changes contemplated.
We can bet they will take place slowly. We'll start with this, and then what are the dates of the legislative committee hearings, the remaining ones on ESSA? Do you have those?
Mr. Chair, I do not, because they're not available.
Okay, would you make sure the board is informed, and we may wish to participate and or attend or participate if requested by the committee members?
Absolutely.
Okay. Anything else for Ms. Mello or Mr. Chapman? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, we're still ahead of schedule.
Not a bad 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We're actually getting a little bit. Merry Christmas.
Yes.
So,
it's Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, whatever. Let's see, what could we do next? Standards review is due at 11:30.
She's here now.
So you want to start that?
We can start that.
Or would you like to?
Yep.
Let me find standards review. Hold on. Okay. Dr. Ansis, would you please introduce the standards review process, please?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Melissa Kolsman, Executive Director of Teaching and Learning, and Carol Gates, Director of Standards and Instructional Support. Today is really just another opportunity for you all to give feedback on the standards revision process. This is all draft. And open for discussion, so this is just kind of an update to the process, and we've tried to take into some of the considerations that you all have brought up in past board meetings. So with that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Kolsman.
So good morning, state board members, and Mr. Chairman has stepped away for a moment, but good morning to you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for this opportunity to begin the conversation about the upcoming standards review and revision process. As Dr. Anthus noted, I'm Melissa Kolsman, Executive Director of the Teaching and Learning Unit, and today I'm joined by Carol Gates, who is the Director of the Office of Standards and Instructional Support. Not all of you know Carol, so I want to introduce her to you. Carol is a fourth-generation Coloradan from the Pikes Peak region as a homegrown graduate of Colorado Springs District 11. She has been in education for 25 years, teaching first and second grade, and fourth and fifth grade, as well as serving in the roles of assistant principal and principal. Carol came to CDE in 2008, where prior to her current role as director of the Office of Standards Instructional Support, she served as the state arts content specialist. While in this role, she was part of the 2009 Colorado Academic Standards Development process for all four of the arts areas. Today we are here to begin a discussion for the plan for the standards review and revision process. Over the past months, we've been developing a draft proposal for the standards review and revision process based on the requirements of state statute, learning from the processes the state used in 2009 to develop the Colorado Academic Standards, and research into successful practices from other states. I'd like to draw your attention to the document titled Proposal, Colorado Academic Standards Review and Revision Plan. Our intention is to bring aspects of this plan forward to you over the next 2 to 3 months for your feedback in order to develop a final plan which reflects the wishes of the state board. Today we're going to be asking for your feedback in two of the areas of this plan. As is the first of a number of discussions regarding the standards review and revision process, today our primary purpose is to get your feedback on two important components of the proposal: the initial review and revision process proposal design and principles to guide the standards review and revision process. Earlier this year, as the board discussed the standards review and revision process, as Dr. Anthus noted, members requested that CDE look beyond the process it followed in 2009 when developing the current Colorado Academic Standards. To that end, we will also share with you what we've learned by researching the review processes of other states have utilized, which has informed some of the aspects of the proposal we have before you today. Finally, we will share some information with you about what is happening now and what is on the horizon related to this work. Just as a quick orientation to your materials, in addition to the presentation that you have, as I've already noted, you have a draft proposal that we'll be presenting to you multiple times. You'll see multiple iterations of this until the board is pleased with the proposal. You'll also find an excerpt from CAP4K, which relates to statutory requirements for the standards review or for the standards, as well as one of the reports that we've commissioned about the review processes other states have undergone, so that you can see that report in its entirety. We'll be referencing it later. To set the context for today's discussion, we'll provide some background information for board members regarding state statutory requirements related to the standards. So why are we reviewing the standards? Well, Senate Bill 212, Colorado's Academic Plan for Kids, or CAP4K, requires a regular process to review and revise the standards. The first review and revision cycle is set to conclude on or before July 1 of 2018, and then every 6 years thereafter. This is a state-driven process and is not related to the ESSA state plan development process. The reason I emphasize that is because there is a standard spoke committee related to the ESSA state plan, and because these are happening at similar times, there can be a little bit of confusion, but this is driven entirely by state law. So now I'm going to have Carol present some background information again on what's also further requirements about the standards, because not all board members were here in 2009 and 10 when this process was first conducted.
Just let me ask Ms. Gates, are you going to kind of give us a quick update of the legislative mandated requirements of these standards?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
So the next few slides are going to provide grounding for what standards are and what the legislative requirements are of the standards. So we define standards as what students should know, understand, and be able to do at the end of a grade level or a grade span. Know is defined as refers to facts, dates, places, people, definitions. So using a mathematics example, addition and subtraction facts would be the knowledge. Understand refers to the theories, generalizations, which is often referred to as big ideas. So that understanding, if we stay with that mathematics example, addition and subtraction is really understanding the general premise of what addition is. It's adding two, putting things together. Subtraction is taking something apart, taking something away. And do is where students demonstrate that knowledge and understanding through skills, such as communication, reading, computation. Moving on to that example for mathematics on addition and subtraction, using that knowledge and understanding to demonstrate a skill of solving one or two-step word problems. So it's when we discuss standards, it's always helpful to delineate the difference between standards, curriculum, and instruction. Standards are those broad goals articulating what students should know, understand, and be able to do over a given period of time. Curriculum is an organized plan of instruction, which can be a sequence of instructional units. It can be a purchased program scope and sequence. It can also be something that districts have developed. Instruction are those learning experiences that are designed to meet those needs of those students in the classroom. Colorado Revised Statute gives the state board authority to set the state standards, and Colorado Revised Statute gives the local education agencies authority to implement curriculum and instruction.
Ms. Gates, I have a question. In your judgment, do our existing standards de-emphasize what someone should know and place greater emphasis on what someone should do?
So, Mr. Chairman, I think I'll take that. Keep in mind that we have standards in 10 different content areas, and so that answer could depend on which content area we're talking about. I think you might be referring to some of the criticisms, perhaps, of the English language arts standards from the Common Core. That has been a criticism of the Common Core state standards in that they don't include the amount of content that some would like to see. And when we refer to content in that context.
In your judgment, yeah. How hard would it be to correct, let's just presume for a minute that criticism's valid, how difficult would it be to correct that problem?
Mr. Chairman, that is exactly what this review and revision process is about. It's about taking a look at our standards, seeing if there are some areas of weaknesses, and making those necessary revisions. So that wouldn't necessarily be difficult. It would just be a matter of pulling together the process that would enable that.
Thank you for, yes, Dr. Flores.
And how big is, competency-based education, how big is that? I mean, I would say that given my experience with competency-based education, it kind of lowers things. Lowers standards, and we may not get the breadth, so to speak, because we get it kind of to the middle. We don't go as high, and we don't catch possibly those at the bottom. And so in relation to curricula and to competency-based education, I think that the state has been pushing. Would you say that that is still a big push, the competency-based part, given the problems that I've seen through competency-based education? And this is an area where I really have looked at it for many years.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Please.
So we'll distinguish between competency-based education and kind of standards-based education, if that is okay with you. I think you're referring to a system that allows for advancement of students based on demonstration of competencies. And there are a number of districts in our state who are either in an extended year implementation of competency-based education, and some districts who are just at the beginning of that. The way that that really is a local decision about how to implement the standards, how to address the standards. So what the state does is define academic standards. If you think about that, as that's a floor for what a student should know, understand, and do at a grade level. It's up to districts to determine how they would like to implement that and how they would like to have advancement decisions based on their judgment of how students demonstrate competency or meeting those particular standards. So I think you raise a good point, but I would separate out competency-based systems from the standards.
But wouldn't you say that developing a whole curricula on competency-based would be very difficult for a district, especially given that there aren't a lot of resources out there, and that it could put some kids in jeopardy if that competency-based program was not in place? I'll give you an example. I went through a competency-based master's program. The professors didn't have the curriculum ready, so I suffered in that because they didn't have the end goal of what a standard was. I didn't get a grade until the end of 2 years for all my work, which was very disappointing. And I think that we're seeing that. I'm hearing that from some districts, you know, where the competencies are not yet there. The curricula is not that there yet. So on a, I guess on a formative, where teachers, you know, form the curricula and such and grade, they're kind of confused about how that's going to happen. Even at this date.
Questions or comments? Please proceed, Ms. Coleman.
So moving on to the legislative requirements for our standards, it's helpful to walk through a bit of a timeline of what we've been doing under this current statute of CAP4K. So in 2008, CAP4K was passed. In 2009, the standards development occurred in 10 core content areas. In 2010, the assessment system attributes were defined, and the State Board of Education adopted Common Core State Standards, which led to a reissue of the English Language Arts and Mathematics content area standards. In 2011 and 13, that was set up as our transition phase. 13 and 14 was full implementation of standards and adding that final assessment transition. And our next milestone, as you know, is July 1st, 2018, which will be our very first review and revision cycle of the Colorado Academic Standards.
Now, is it, there's a revision or review supposed to be complete by that date or underway by that date?
So the state law requires that it occur on or before July 1, 2018.
Thank you.
So in your handouts, as Melissa suggested to you earlier, you do have a copy of the section of statute that defines the requirements of standards. On this slide, we've taken the liberty of defining some of the key highlights you'll find within that document. The Colorado Academic Standards must minimally include the listing of content areas you see there. And as of our last legislative session, 1198 will require the addition of optional secondary computer science standards by that July 1st, 2018. The second bullet is that the standards must be comparable in scope relevance, and rigor to the highest national and international standards, meaning we need to have our standards benchmarked against the highest performing states and nations. They must require the development of skills, as you see listed directly in statute as well as in our slide here. They must also include the last three bullets that are really around the bridging idea of PK through 12th grade standards. They want students to be, the standards to be able to be aligned with career and technical education. The standards need to be aligned to the state's post-secondary and workforce readiness definition, and ultimately result in students that graduate as post-secondary and workforce-ready graduates. So hopefully that gives you a bit of grounding on the history of where we've been so far under CAP4K, as well as the requirements of the standards. Melissa will share with you now some of the initial research we've been doing in our initial planning phase.
So thank you, Carol. As I noted in my opening remarks, we appreciated the board's suggestion to not just follow the process CDE conducted in 2009 when the Colorado academic standards were developed. In response to this request, we've commissioned some research into the processes some other states have utilized. To assist us in broadening our perspective of how Colorado could approach the standards review and revision process, we initiated a two-phase study. First, we commissioned a scan of all 50 states to get some information on the status of standards revision processes conducted since Colorado adopted its standards in 2009 and 2010. From this, we learned some basic information about which states have reviewed and revised their standards, which you will see is almost all of them, and in which content areas. A small summary of this information is presented on the slide. But in addition to this basic information, we learned some general process information related to engagement of stakeholders and how the actual process was conducted. From here, we commissioned a second phase of the study where we looked at 13 states' processes so we could learn from the successes and failures of other states to inform the plan that you have before you today. We called the second phase of the study our peer profiles, which was a deeper dive into the specific processes states utilize and how those processes worked. You have a copy of the full report in your materials, and that is the technical response request from the American Institutes of Research. What we do here is summarize the key highlights. So there were three key themes that emerged when we looked at successful practices of other states. One was in stakeholder engagement. Stakeholder engagement was noted as a fundamental component of standards revision processes. States used surveys and online feedback processes to gain the information needed for decision making. Communication was also noted as a critical piece of the standards revision processes for states. And states regularly disseminated information about the process itself, what the next steps are, and regular progress reporting to the public.
Yes.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Yes.
In terms of the survey, somebody, Ms. Sampaio recently just testified about the survey questions, and do they allow the right information to be surfaced? Mm-hmm. Would you like to comment on that, since that's part of the
how
absolutely. Are we getting feedback?
Absolutely. I'm really glad that you brought that up, because one of the things that we learned is that some states use just a survey. Other states use like an online feedback system. What we're doing is actually using both, because there are limitations for both. So the limitation that you heard from the survey is that you can only have some broad perceptions noted. What we're actually going to be able to demonstrate for you today is an online feedback system that I think gets at exactly what our public commenter was noting, which is, I want to get in and say something very specific about the standards. So one of the things that we learned from other states is that, and we modeled a system based on I think it was three different states who did this, which they allowed a system for any individual in the state to go online, open up any and every standard if they would like, click and leave a comment, so that we would get very specific feedback about what it is and that people are finding problematic, and then also suggestions for how to remedy that. So we're going to be able to demonstrate that to you today. I think between the two things, the general perception survey, we can have some high-level information about, well, what do people think? You wouldn't get that type of information from an online system, you could only say, wow, there were a lot of comments in fourth grade math or a lot of comments in eighth grade science. So I think between the two, we'll be able to have some really good information for you as the board of what do people think about the standards and what do they think needs to happen with the standards.
And what happens with the information that's already been submitted? I mean, I've gotten calls mm-hmm. from constituents saying they submitted a letter to CDE, but then the link came up, and I don't know if that all got into the link or should they resubmit. And then, as you know, we had lots of letters delivered to the board mm-hmm. in the last probably year and a half or something before we started the revision mm-hmm. process. Is that feedback somewhere? I'm not sure how that kind of cumulative feedback, mm-hmm. where that sits.
So that's also a very good question, and much of that is within the state board kind of email. And so so we do have that at our disposal as well. We've set up a specific email address for the review and revision process in addition to the survey and this online system. The email address will enable kind of ongoing information to come to the department for this process. So we do have the opportunity to kind of take all of this information and provide that to whether the board determines that we would like to go with a committee structure and provide that information to committees so that they're hearing directly from constituents versus basing any of their own recommendations only on their own opinion and own experience.
So if people have submitted letters, should we say to them also go to the link and resubmit, or would just get those letters? It's a question for Busy, but I just hearing from folks to say, well, mm-hmm. I did send in information, mm-hmm. but I don't see it. So we just have to think about where is it.
Right. I would hesitate to ask people to now go do it again, mm-hmm. Because I know that people have already taken their time to submit information, and we can absolutely make sure we get all of that information to the committees. I think what we get from the survey and the online system is something that can't be just sent in a letter, which is, especially with the online system, if you have some specific areas of concern, show us where that is so that the committees can make whatever changes they would like to recommend based on feedback from the public.
Okay, and I have one final question.
Please proceed.
So as we look at the standards, I mean, I've talked to so many teachers about these standards, mm-hmm. and people will say, well, I really think in fifth grade this set of standards really is great, mm-hmm. But then there's this other issue. So there's in some other grade or some other subject or whatever. I mean, it's very kind of detailed. And mm-hmm. then from a broad perspective, as we look at critiques of the standards, one might conclude, there's really more of a focus on writing as opposed to reading. Mm-hmm. And I've actually seen that played out in classrooms mm-hmm. so that students are expected to have mastered writing before they've really mastered reading, which mm-hmm. is almost impossible to mm-hmm. have happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's like the big picture pieces, I think we need a mechanism to really look at that. Mm-hmm. And they really come out of critiques of common yep. Of our standards mm-hmm. and the Common Core portion mm-hmm. of it, as well as our distinctives. Looking broadly, what are the themes that course through yep. these standards? And then, of course, teachers have specific feedback on mm-hmm. their grade, based on their grade and so forth. But we need a mechanism for looking broadly about a big picture item mm-hmm. like, does it focus so much on writing that students are in some respects set up not to do well mm-hmm. because they haven't had the enough instruction in reading? That's a great kind of common theme, mm-hmm. so thank you.
Yeah. So, Mr. Please, Chairman, yes. You bring up a really, really important point, and I think that we have to be thinking about how we're getting the right information, not just detail of, like, is, fourth grade, what specifically needs to be adjusted in fourth grade, but then what are those broad themes? We do have a place on our online system. We'll actually be able to, we have some screenshots to be able to show you that a little bit later, but there is a place for those broader themes and comments. But I think we could probably we can even be thinking of some other ways to have perhaps some comments that are specific to content areas yeah. that I think could be useful.
And so another example is this 50 to 75% expository text. I mean, people, mm-hmm. that was put in place based on the premise that it teaches vocabulary better, mm-hmm. and vocabulary is a great predictor of reading comprehension. Mm-hmm. But is that right? Mm-hmm. And then you've got the other piece of it, which is great literature mm-hmm. hasn't really been able to be addressed as it once was just because we've been focusing on expository right. or nonfiction yep. text. Yep. So that's the kind of thing that might not show up from a fourth grade teacher looking mm-hmm. specifically at math standards or English language arts mm-hmm. because they're looking at their particular area. Yep. So those broad areas are great things yep. for this board to really consider yep. in depth. Yes.
Thank you.
Dr. Flores.
Right, and we think of a well-educated person
as a Renaissance person, but yet, you know, we have, it is so skills-based that the content really suffers. Did you hear me? I think we need to think about an educated person as a Renaissance person, you know, who knows mm-hmm. a lot about different subjects, music, physical education, dance, literature, music. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when we're cutting out some of these areas that I think are so important, like art and music and physical education, dance mm-hmm. and such, I don't think we're going to have the type of individual that we need. I mean, it seems as if we're honing in on computers, and we think computers are the future. They are the future. And so we have all these tech people, all these people going into banking and such, but we don't have history majors, language majors, and such. And we need to, you know, have all of those individuals. It's just so important. Mm-hmm. And we can't just go on the technical.
Mm-hmm. Any other comments? Yes, Ms. Goff?
I beg your indulgence on a little clarification. Is the intent over the next 2 years on our standards review to bring in, to consider all 10 contents?
So our understanding is that when the state statute requires a revision of the standards in 2000 by 2018, that includes all of those that are listed in state statute, which does include, as Dr. Flores noted, all of the content areas, including the arts, physical education, and a really nice thing about CAFRK and the legislative declaration is they note a need for a rich and balanced curriculum for students to, I think, achieve what you're talking about.
Thank you for that.
Anything else?
One follow-up.
Yes, please proceed.
I think what we're going to find, we've known it for a while, but we're going to find more, is the need to really help people understand the difference between standards, curriculum, and pedagogy. And I think there's a difference. So I guess I'd be intent that one of our goals be helping that understanding along. All of the things we've been talking today are absolutely standard skills, knowledge, behaviors, displays, etc. But the how specific do the standards need to be in delineating between those content areas that are included in general thinking or not? And I've just felt that having been here since the beginning of these conversations, it has always been a challenge to foster the understanding of what makes an aspirational statement different from a strategy statement. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take the standard idea versus the curriculum idea, it's just, we need to make sure folks understand that and feel mm-hmm. comfortable. Ultimately, we need to understand it. Mm-hmm. So in our conversations, I think that's something I would suggest we make a goal, is are we on the same page here with mm-hmm. what's necessary to make the aspirational statement and what has to be added to contribute to the ways and means of meeting that aspiration. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use strategy because that can be different too. But I appreciate this effort, and I'm personally glad it does include all 10, because I think that's the only way to get the integration going, which applies to whether we have the type of text, what does it mean to do close reading and consider that. So I'm going to make it my little, you know, my personal goal to help draw people's attention back to some of the finer points about mm-hmm. doing this work, and I think that's going to help us clarify for our constituents and all the groups that we do want to participate in this and have the voice out there. I think it's going to make it a little easier if we're at least, I hope we get there, on a common path to understanding mm-hmm. what the difference is, mm-hmm. what we're doing.
Thank you. Dr. Chappell.
And I appreciate your comments, Jane. I would just say, though, that when publishers looked at the Common Core standards and aligned their curricula with those standards, there were substantial changes. So I think we also have to really look at the relationship between curriculum and standards. It's substantial, and it influences what teachers teach and also how they teach. So it is very relevant to grassroots, what goes on in classrooms.
Okay. Anything else? I have one comment, Ms. Kultzman, and it's not directed at you and staff, but it is directed at the education reform community. Several months ago, we simply made the announcement that we were going to consider, as a board, standards and the PARC test, and whether we ought to continue with PARC test, and whether we ought to be looking at revising standards. Mysteriously, at the next meeting, apparently those comments of the chair were disseminated far and wide, and lots of just individual, ordinary people paid attention, and they traveled from the corners of the state to read well-prepared, very well-thought-out comments about keeping PARC and keeping the standards. Now, it could be that they all materialized on their own after just hearing we were going to talk about it. I also believe in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy. And I'm really tired of the education reform community salting the public comment periods with people to promote their points of view. The public has every right to participate and every right to do that. I would have a lot more respect for the education reform community if they'd have the guts to come up here, put their names on it, stand in front of us as representatives of those organizations, and tell us what they think. And if they wish to bring a representative sample of teachers and others who support their positions, they're certainly welcome to do so. But you know, they may think all the members of this board were born at night, and some of us probably were, but it wasn't last night. And it's not hard to see through this, and I would just simply suggest an honest approach on the part of the education reform community would be appreciated. Let them promote and justify what it is they want to do without using the tactics with which they're currently engaged. And secondly, I do think that teachers and other professionals who have a different point of view are very likely discouraged by their colleagues and peers and those in power who are politically correct from voicing their concerns about these. And I think it may behoove us to seek out those individuals and conduct randomly selected scientific focus groups of randomly selected teachers at various grade levels and subject matter areas and in a scientific method to see if really we're getting a spoon-fed set of responses or whether or not those responses really reflect what's going on out there in the education community. And I think I'm going to speak with staff about how we go ahead and afford to do that research and get that research done so we bleed out the undue influence of those groups that have what appears to be an endless amount of money to spend on these projects. So I appreciate the work you're doing, but I would admonish all of you to recognize that the feedback you may be getting may be more contrived than real. Thank you. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Durham. So one of the key learnings that we just summarize is that some states have found that it's useful to identify principles that guide the standards review and revision process. Guiding principles can articulate the values of the state board and set parameters for decision-making throughout the review and revision process. To that end, we're bringing for you today the first of two feedback discussions. So we're going to invite feedback, because apparently you don't need invitation for feedback. By the way, that's a joke. Our question for you is, what principles should guide the review and revision process? And we have some considerations for you on your slide, and these are some derived from other states, and some of them actually were from our first process. The reason why we think this is important is because it makes a difference for decision-making. So, for instance, If we would like to be research informed, then that does mean that we would do certain things, like perhaps conduct focus groups. So if that's a guiding principle or a value of the board, then that tells us which direction to go. So we're asking for your thoughts on what principles should guide this. And again, we have a few up here for consideration. Transparency is about decisions made in public. Inclusive means that this would involve stakeholders, research-informed, consistent, that it would be consistent with what's required by statute, substantive, meaning it would focus on the substance of the standards, what the standards actually say, improvement-oriented, focus on improving what we have, or there could be others that we would like to suggest. We would find that helpful to know your values when we conduct this process, which is why we're asking you this question.
Yes, I'm sorry, Dr. Flores, did you have a question?
Well, have you considered asking university people? I know in this state, you know, sometimes intellectuals are not highly regarded, but you know, there are some experts, and they may not be all at the university, but we do have a center for policy, national policy education here in the state, and I think they write interesting papers and provide interesting information on the issues in education that are kind of being talked about, not only here, but in the country. And then we have Jane, who is also part of the National Board of Education, and they consider. So I'm just wondering if these individuals are also, I mean, if we asked someone from the University of Colorado, you know, any of the branches or DU or any of the other private schools, you know, people that are studying these that could be included, and not just, you know, these nonprofits that I think most of them are very, they want to reform. They want to push a reform agenda. And I mean, I just looked at the people that we have on the HUB committee, and I can just see that all of them come from, you know, those reform communities. And so I'm concerned.
Yes, that's all. Dr. Sheffield?
Yeah, and just when we're thinking about these considerations, I would add to that, you know, the Common Core standards, which comprise 85% of our Colorado academic standards, were informed by a number of white papers and entities, and they based their work on assumptions, and that's what needs to be looked at as we review these standards. We can look at details, and we should, but we also need to look at, were the assumptions that informed the drafting of this language, are they right? Do they hold true? Do we agree with them as a board? And that work needs to be done. And, you know, I've just raised a couple of different examples of that. So if we could add that to the list, I think that would help us think conceptually about, is this about the work?
Right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry, we keep interrupting. Please proceed.
No, this is exactly what we were wanting. So I guess if there are some other thoughts, we can bring back these, you know, revise these guiding principles based on what we've heard today. We would anticipate coming back in December with some decision points. So would you want us to move forward with our next discussion, Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please.
Okay. So the next discussion that we would like is about the who, how, and when of this process. We'd like to hear your feedback. So I'm going to discuss kind of the who, how, and when that are part of our proposal and get your feedback so that we can then revise that planning based on your thoughts. So when we talk about who, we've thought about four kind of major roles and responsibilities that would be included in the review and revision process. At the center is the State Board of Education, who would play a decision-making role to guide the process and ultimately review and approve any recommended revisions. At the top, the proposal identifies the role of stakeholders as providing feedback on the process itself and on any proposed revisions to the standards. On the lower right, the plan identifies the role of content area committees to review that stakeholder feedback and make recommendations and revisions based on that feedback to you for consideration. And finally, on the lower left, the plan identifies the role of the department as just facilitating this process and staffing the content areas. The next slide.
Ms. Masnick?
So when you say CDE staff will facilitate the review and revision process and staff the content area committees, mm-hmm. So are you saying that you will find the educators, et cetera, to be on those committees?
So that's a very good question. Actually, in December, what we plan to bring forward to you, if this is, you know, based on your feedback here, if there's a committee structure that you would like, what we would bring forward to you is a process for how we would facilitate the selection of the committees. So we see our role throughout this as facilitating, meaning we bring forward decision points for you to help to conduct the process. Based on what you say, we go and do that on your behalf, and we basically keep everything moving. And by staffing the committees, we would mean that, for instance, I was on the I was the math specialist back in 2008 and mm-hmm. 9 when we created the Colorado Academic Standards in Math. So what I did is I staffed the committee. I was there on behalf of the department. I made sure the committee was set up. We had a chairperson who actually ran the committee and who conducted all of the decision-making processes for the committee. I was there if there were questions about content. I just helped the committee run, but the actual committee was not run by CDE. It was staffed by CDE. So that's what we mean by staffing. Means we're there just to make sure that the coffee's there, that the notes get taken, that we follow up and send out and put things up on the web so that people can see meeting notes and so on.
So the members of the actual committee, where will those be?
How will they be selected?
How will those be selected?
That's a good question. We have, I believe we have a little bit of information in your proposal for that, but we would come forward in December with a full proposal. One of the things that other states have found successful and that happened here in 2008 and 9 when we selected committees for the original process was we had a blind application process, meaning folks would go online, submit their qualifications. They did submit all of their, you know, their name and contact information. They submit their qualifications and the rationale for why they would like to be on the committee. But when those applications were reviewed, the names were stripped off so that it was based on the quality of the application for the committee. So that could be how this next process is done. In 2009-10, there was also an external stakeholder group for the whole process, akin to the hub committee right now for ESSA, and they actually kind of functioned the way the hub committee is now. They were the ones who actually reviewed those applications. So we would love to hear your thoughts on how to conduct that process and what you would like to see happen.
Thank you.
Yes, Dr. Sheffield.
So I'm just concerned that this makes total sense, these various circles and, you know, who comprises each. But I'm just concerned that if we take this approach, we may just get tweaking around the edges and not really consideration of the nature of standards. Are they guardrails? How detailed are they? When you really pull out the standards, which I've printed all of them off and bound them for myself, it is so much language and much of it vague and some of it, I mean, it's like the language itself needs to be defined. And so it's like the nature of language to drive instruction. What is the nature of the standards? What should they, at what level of detail really should they be? And I feel like if we set it up this way, there won't be any room to examine any of those underlying assumptions. And I know I served on the reading, writing, and mm-hmm. communication focus groups, when we did this in 2009 or before. And it felt like it was a great process in the sense that there were wonderful people doing the work. But because of the process itself, there really didn't seem to be time to examine underlying assumptions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, of course, they were informing documents brought to those committees. You know, we had the Finland standards and all that. And just implicitly, the way it was set up, the process and the documents informing the process, the tide of what the conclusion would be was very much in place just because of the process. And so I can get concerned that if we adopt this process, we'll tweak the edges of our standards and we won't ever get to step back and really hear what is the nature of our standards and how can we really make them better and how can we really get great feedback from the public. I think we should re-examine this process because it is kind of replication of what we did before in many ways.
Dr. Antis.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think we are truly open to a different process. We may be limited by our own imagination and the processes that have come before us because that's what we know. So truly, if you all have some suggestions for a totally different process, we will put that before you and put the documentation together. So, definitely open to those ideas.
So could yes. I just respond?
Go ahead, Doctor.
So I think one thing we could do is really look at the assumptions underneath the white papers that informed the development of the standards in the first place 5, 6, 8 years ago, whatever it is, because 85% of our standards were developed in that manner. And if we look at those documents and unpack the assumptions and sit as a board with the language and the white papers, we then can decide as a board, do we still embrace these assumptions and are we still moving along this path or do we want to adjust and change? And I think without that deep work on the part of the board, the language in front of us, the white papers that informed the standards development in the first place, the assumptions sitting under those, that's 3 levels of analysis. We can do that if we allocate a day or so and have the documents before us. I think that would launch the work in a way that provides the opportunity for real change if we decide that that's a direction we want to.
Yes, Ms. Goff?
Refresh my memory. Was there not integration, inner workings between the content areas through the content collaboratives? Was there some interchange of ideas, discussions, research exchanges? We had the Common Core group. We had our standards complete, and then the Common Core was worked into that, so that vice versa. Did science and math, because science not being a part of the Common Core group, were those two sets of teachers even or experts, any of our content collaborative members in any content area, did they work together at some point? That's, it's either a yes or a no, I don't remember, you guys would. Did any other pairings of content areas get together to work on the final body of our standards for the state of Colorado? I just wonder if that would be maybe a tweak or two we could refocus on, make a little more prominent in the discussion, because perhaps there would be a strong possibility of getting to a little bit broader look at whatever the assumptions may be. I mean, I have a thing today, right now, I'm experiencing. So what are a bunch of people going to end up doing, including us, possibly, is assume what assumptions are. I mean, how do we know there's a solid base of reasoning for saying this is an assumption that happened?
Because we could read those informing documents, and I think they're fairly clear.
Well, good. I mean, I hope so, because I wouldn't want to encourage any of our people or us really from jumping into something where we don't have a good solid base of something we can accept. I think maybe that's my issue today. How long is it going to take for us to accept something that we can use, or are we going to be kind of stringing things out here and there because we've got disagreements on what to accept? And I'm just thinking about what is the best way to involve people who have a variety of experiences with this work, and particularly people in school buildings who do this every day. You know, we've got to make sure that they've got a place to grab on. And the only other
think about the process itself. I would hope that whether it be focus groups, online feedback or surveys, whatever it is, there is a real attempt to include both sides of what I think has become a silent majority or minority. I really couldn't tell you right now anything solid about the number of consumers of this work, which are teachers, kids, and schools right now. How many people have withheld their true reaction to this, to the implementation we've been at for a long time now? And how many have felt comfortable and free and unrestrained in voicing their support for it? I don't know. I would just like to think that this has been a pretty hot issue for us mm-hmm. over the years, up and down. And I'm not sure what kind of voice we're hearing on either side. If there's a strong consumer-based, constituent-based opinion or feeling one way or the other, do we keep going down this path, or is there a need to really turn it upside down, or is it okay for us to stop and consider carefully what are good, solid adjustments, modifications? Because we don't have as much time as it might feel like. It's less than 2 years. Mm-hmm. And to do this right takes a little bit more time than jamming it all into 2 years. That's all.
Dr. Flores?
I'm done.
Well, I think you think that it's all, that because the standards are out, the curricula is out too. But I don't think that's the case. I'll just give...
I wasn't thinking in terms of curricula. I'm sorry.
Well,
but I'm just thinking in terms of the whole process of how do we approach basically our state's message about what's important for kids to know when
they're
in school.
Well, there's a large majority of people out there that may not be saying much, but
I don't think
they accept these standards. And I think that, let me give you an example of Denver. Denver is having they're taking 5 years. They started 2 years ago looking at textbooks for Common Core Standard. They're not using it on all schools. They've limited it to a few schools. As far as materials. So let's say that they started last year and they're just beginning to take selected some and are using it here and there. I don't know what the other teachers are doing. I think everybody's just confused about, you know, what they're going to teach. They don't have any tools because, you know, they're basically saying, well, they're good. Some of them are good. And I'm just also thinking about other friends that I have across the country. And some of them in districts are thinking, well, these are not good. They're already making assumptions. What the publishers are looking at is it's not good or it's good. The quality isn't there. And so what are we teaching? I mean, what are we using as tools? And we think of curricula, you know, that's already out there. And I venture to say to you that there are a lot of districts that don't have a curricula because either they don't understand or they don't have the capacity, you know, to start creating curricula.
Dr. Shovel.
Thank you. I guess what I would think would be a good way to start this work, possibly, if the board would agree, is for us to sit down with the copies of the standards and actually read them. I would ask ourselves, have we actually read the standards? I mean, I'm quoting from the math standards, grade 6. Understand the concept of a ratio and use ratio language to describe a racial relationship between two quantities. I mean, the nature of the language infused into mathematics, and met with a parent recently who said, they asked my third grader to explain something, and that they had done in math, and their ability to meta-linguistically analyze the operational process in doing math developmentally really didn't make a lot of sense. So it's like the child got the right answer, but he or she was asked to explain. Now, we know in terms of child development that our ability to reflect on, our ability to accomplish a task is developmentally related. And it's difficult to step back and explain something all the time, depending on one's level of development linguistically and a host of other issues. There's an example of an underlying assumption that could emerge if we would sit down and actually read the standards and the assumptions that have driven the way they're written. And that's one example. Mm-hmm. So I guess I would ask as we start the process, could we take a day and could we print out in hard copy the standards and really read them and then examine the assumptions that have driven the way they're written and the way they function? And then we could begin some mm-hmm. of these other processes. If we don't do that, we're just going to tweak the standards. And I guess I think we should examine them holistically.
The answer, I think, your question, Dr. Shovel, is yes, we can, and we will take that time, and we'll certainly ask staff what would be the most appropriate mm-hmm. opportunity to schedule that. And I think it's, I've said before, that the fundamental problem with Common Core math standards is that the right answer is less important than the way you get it. And as I noted, my son-in-law, who has a master's degree in engineering, had a hard time helping his third grader with his math homework. That's unacceptable. And I think that's driven by these standards that reward process over result. So we will take that time, and we will do that. So thank you. Yes, Ms. Goff?
Another technical. I really don't want to get into this. The notebooks that we got prior when they were adopted, are those still the same as far as the main content of them?
That's correct.
So I don't know that we all need to have anything reprinted. That is okay. A huge amount of printing.
We would be happy to print out as many as are needed.
Well, they are online, so I mean, y'all work it out. They can be done in small chunks, I suppose, if that's what would work. But I have to make one last comment. We're talking about assumptions here. Assumptions. You know, I guess one thing that we'll probably need to have a conversation on is who is assumed to be the target for the way those standards are written. Now, you know, a set of standards is for I would say my first reaction is teachers. This is the person, the group, we're gonna look at these aspirational things, and we're going to implement, model our curriculum, which brings in all the materials and everything after this. So as a former teacher, I can't help but think I better understand and identify with what that says. I need to be the first one to do that. And I don't know that a huge volume of standards is going to be set down in front of a third grader and say, tell me what you see and what you understand your mission is. I think that's the job of the classroom teacher. So my concern would be that teachers are first familiar and truly own and buy into what that means. You know, then they make the decision of how am I going to implement that in my classroom. That connects chain links to parents to understand what the purpose of this and how that goes and what's meant to be the outcome of that and what it looks like if you want to do that. I think our assumptions about who starts this process, we want to keep it in a rotating system. So who is it most important to at the very beginning? I'm not going to say, you know, there's a definite answer to that. I'm just, as my experience in sitting in a classroom and doing these standards for several years before the final ones were even existing, I'd say that the key person in this is the teacher. And if we come out with a product, and whether it involves tweaks or major flippos, that's really not an issue to me right now, right today. I just think a teacher needs to understand and feel comfortable in what this is asking them to teach. And that suggests the manner by which that is done. So I appreciate it. I know, Deb, we've all had conversations out there with people, and there's still a lot of fuzziness about it. Some have come around and kind of enjoy it. They're learning about how it's done. Others are still struggling. I do think that if we can accomplish a clearing of misunderstanding now on this, at this point in time, that's a really good thing to look forward to for everybody's sake. But we've got to gear in, and where's the starting point to this diagram? Where does it start? That's my thing.
Yes, Dr. Florence.
You know, when I was running a couple of years ago, I had a call from an engineer who was very concerned. This is a practitioner who was very concerned. Mm-hmm. Who was very concerned about some friends that he had, and he wanted me to meet with this group of engineers, and I did. And their big problem was that these were engineers. They were working engineers. They had jobs. They were doing supposedly a good job, and I take that because they hadn't been fired. And they couldn't help their kids with their homework. And they were all of the opinion, what are you teaching out there? So, something's wrong when you have engineers in their 30s, probably maybe some 40s, who cannot help their kids with a math. And I'm talking about elementary math.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? Ms. Goldsman? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members of the board, this has been extremely helpful to hear your thoughts on this work. To Dr. Shuffle's point, I think what the first phase that we show on this slide just is around research and information gathering. I think you're suggesting to add more to that phase, which is that deeper dive, looking at some of the underlying assumptions. That's absolutely something that we can work into this process, and then determine what do we do with all of that information, I think would be the next question. And so, the suggestion, the proposal would be to have some committees that would then take the direction from the board and what they see from the feedback from the field, and be able to start making some recommendations back to you for revisions. A few things that I would suggest for the board is to consider is, recall that we have 10 content areas right now, and two of them include the Common Core. So we have science and social studies standards, all four of the arts areas, comprehensive health and PE, and those standards do not have, there is no Common Core in those areas. So there could be a different level of revision for different content areas, and there could be a different level of revision needed at particular grade levels. So I think those are things that we are very much aware of. So the basic process then, what we're saying is that we would involve public feedback along the way, that this would be driven by the state board. The general timeline that we're looking at is that the 16-17 school year, which is now, is all in the planning, research, and resource development phase of just getting ready for this, and with the idea that ideally we could actually start convening and start this work during the school year, and it might be towards the end of the school year. But that process would continue through the 17-18 school year with a July 2018 endpoint for the process. Districts would have 2 years to review and revise their standards, and this is a process set into statute with the first year of implementation, which would coincide with a state assessment revision. As we've discussed this with Joyce Sierkowski, this fits with a timeline that would take to make any type of revisions to the state assessment system as well. Please do not ask me too many technical questions about that. I like to leave those to her. So we've already mentioned that there is a perception survey, which is providing broad-level feedback that's open through this coming Sunday. Today we are able to demonstrate. We actually have some screenshots of our online standards review system because we had a little bit of some technical difficulty being able to display the live site for you in here today, and we thought rather than watch technical difficulties, because we all know how much fun that is, we have kind of three screenshots just to give you a sense of what this is, but we'll send you a link so that you can actually go in and look at this. So we'll ask now to flip over to the screenshots. And this is only 58 more slides, so I think we'll be good. Yes, another joke. So the first thing that you'll see, and again, you're not going to read the details. You're looking just kind of holistically at this. This is what you would see if you were to select, like, fourth grade social studies, and you would click on history. So you would see the actual, like, instead of like you have in your big binders of the standards, you would see the pages of the standards laid out here. Looks very similar to the actual standards layout. I want to thank our web management team, Michelle Gephardt and Marcus Johnstone. They worked very, very hard on this and have done an amazing job to get this to be very, very user-friendly. So as you navigate into it, what you'll see is there's a couple of little icons, which you can't tell, or at least I can't. I even have my progressive lenses on. I still can't see. But in the upper left-hand corner next to each of the components of the standards, like the prepared graduate competencies, there's a little I, which is a little information icon that says, if you don't know what that means, because you might not have been into the standards, if you click on the I, what it will do is it will tell you what a definition of that component is. So just to help it be more user-friendly. The next piece is, and I'll go back to the screenshot, to the right of every single statement within this, what you'll see is a little quote balloon, which is a place, if you click on one of those quote balloons, you will get a pop-up box which will say, please provide feedback on that. One thing is to say, to revise it, and there's a comment box to say, this is what it should be revised to say. Or it should say, this is very complex language. This is really hard for me to understand or my students to understand. Please simplify this. The other option is to move it. So move it to another grade level. So the idea of, wow, this was inappropriate for fourth grade. This is either too high or too low. So you can say, this really should be in fifth grade, or this should really be in third grade. And then the other is remove, meaning this is something that we just don't think needs to be in the standard, so there's that option there. So through this online feedback system, we'll be able to collect that. So what do we do with all of that? Well, what we'll be able to do is create a database such that we can be able to find, by grade level, by content area, every single comment, so that we can start to look for some of those trends. So we can say, is there a trend happening at a particular grade or a particular content area, so that any revisions that we'd have would be based on the feedback of the users of the standards or the people who care deeply about what kids are learning. So this system will be open through the end of this calendar year. And what we'll have then, starting at the beginning of the new year, will be our survey feedback results to present to you, so you'll be able to see what is the general perception survey, and we'll begin to at least start to say, we won't bring you every comment that's provided, but you're welcome to look at them all, but we will be able to note some beginning trends of what we're seeing. So in essence, that is what is coming next, and if we could flip back to the original presentation, what we have on the horizon. We had anticipated coming in December with talking a little bit about the committee application process. We can still do that. I'll defer to the chairman about the focus of that. But we can also come forward and talk a little bit more about the proposal that Dr. Shuffle brought forward and talk about ways that we can achieve that opportunity of looking at some of those deeper assumptions. In early 2017, as we get closer to a plan for the revision process that the board is comfortable with, we'll then begin to have a communication process, because we know that's important to the field to know what's happening and when will it be happening. And monthly through July of 2018, we plan to bring forward updates and decision points for the process. So we've asked lots, you've had questions, comments, and feedback throughout this. I just wanted to end with any an opportunity for any final thoughts from Mr. Chairman or any of the board members.
Any last comments? Yes, Ms. Rankin.
These are Colorado state standards, correct?
Correct.
According to state law.
And correct.
They differ from ESSA standards?
That's a really good question. Tomorrow we'll get into this in a deeper way. But the ESSA requires, I believe it's four components for our standards, for our academic standards. One, that they be, and I'm going to put this in quote, challenging. It's in air quotes on purpose because there's not really a definition for challenging. They need to be aligned with career and tech ed standards. Well, as Carol noted, our standards already are because that's required by state law. The feds require that states have standards in math, reading or language arts, and science. You saw that our state exceeds that, our state law, so we already meet that component of the feds. And the final requirement is that they apply to all schools. Our standards do. Now, there are requirements for English language proficiency standards from the feds, as well as alternate achievement standards for students with significant cognitive disabilities. The bottom line, and this will be the spoiler alert for tomorrow, is our state law already ensures our standards meet what the feds require. And so our state plan for standards is quite minimal. We say we already meet your requirements.
So we're just duplicating?
No, because actually we don't need to do anything. We don't need, in fact, the Congress specifically prohibited the Secretary of Education from asking to see our standards. So really for our state plan, all we're doing is writing an assurance that we meet federal law, and they can't ask us to show our standards, to show that they're challenging. We just provide the assurance of, yep, we meet your requirements.
So when you started out today, you mentioned that you had other state standards.
Mm-hmm.
Are they somehow linked to this evaluation thing? Because I can see some constituents that are extremely concerned about these issues saying, I'm not technical enough to rewrite it, but I know it needs to be rewritten. Mm-hmm. There may be other states that have it written in the language that makes more sense. And as Dr. Mm-hmm. Scheffel said, you know, some of this gets very convoluted and very difficult to understand. Are you looking at math or looking at language arts when you're writing a word mm-hmm. math test, let's say? So we can say, yes, we did. We looked at other states, but how does anyone that's interested have that kind of link off of this evaluation to what some other states are doing? Or do you know this already and say, hey, there are some states that are very similar to ours, just maybe a little different wording, and can direct people to that? How does that work?
So that's a very good question, and we'll actually have some reports to share with you in the near future. But as part of this research process, as Carol noted, our standards need to be comparable in scope and rigor with the highest performing states and nations. So we have looked at and commissioned some studies to help us look at what, for instance, for science, is there a state that we ought to look to for a high-achieving state. So, you know, Massachusetts comes up as one of those states. So what we've commissioned some reports that help us know where could Colorado standards be adjusted to meet those requirements or those the rigor of other states. So we have that available. As those reports are ready, those will go up on our website. How interactive they would be for the general public, I think, you know, they'll be more technical, I think, than the general public. But if it's something that we can do is say, here are a link to those actual state standards, that's very easy for us to do on our website.
And another question about that, I mean, I don't believe we should reinvent the wheel. If somebody has a better way of doing it, let's just take theirs. But shouldn't these be pretty close to each other? I mean, a second grader should have similar standards here as in Massachusetts. I mean, they shouldn't vary that much. I mean, they might vary a little, but what is your broad view of that?
You know, There tends to be some sort of general consensus, I would say, often in like one or two grade levels as to where some content is across states. And I do think that there is kind of that desire to say, you know, how do we make sure we're hitting the right content at the right grade level? So there is often that adjustment that can happen. I think that's what the benchmarking reports can help us do, is start to, first of all, say, you know, how do we stack up with those, and is our level just right? So I think that, you know, giving committees the right information, like here's what a benchmarking report says about your standards. Here's what the public says about your standards. Here's very specific feedback on each and every element of the standards, giving them all of that good information as well as taking a look at the underlying assumptions and starting them off on the right path, I think we can set them up for really good success.
And we also have to parallel those with our tests so that we're not teaching one thing and testing something else.
That's a great point, because really the sequence is always first develop your standards, then develop your assessments. So whether the, you know, adjustments would be needed mm-hmm. to the standards comes, or I'm sorry, to the assessment comes after any adjustments are made.
Thank
to the
you
standards.
Very much. That's very, very thorough. I really mm-hmm. appreciate your report.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much. Very helpful. Appreciate it. And Ms. Gates, thank you for your assistance in this. Ms. Cordial, would you care to read the executive session notice, please?
An executive session has been noticed for today's State Board meeting in conformance with 24-6-402-3A CRS to receive legal advice on specific legal questions pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 2 CRS and matters required to be kept confidential by federal law or rules or state statutes pursuant to 24-6-402-3A Roman numeral 3 CRS.
Thank you very much. Is there a motion for an executive session?
Yes.
Ms. Rankin has moved an executive session. Ms. Masnick seconds. It's been moved and seconded. Is there objection to the motion for the executive session? Seeing none, that motion is adopted by a vote of 6-0. The those who are not entitled to stay for the executive session will please leave. We will take a 10-minute break, and we'll reconvene at 12:15 for the executive session.